Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 30, The Activities of the Pachetas, Text 23. Sudaya Santiya Namaswa Nistaya. Manasya Partam Vilasadvayaya. Namo Jagatstana Layodayesu. Grihita Maya Guna Vigrahaya. Sudaya. Unto the unadulterated. Shantaya. Unto the most peaceful. Namaha. We offer our obeisances. Swanistaya. By being situated in one's position. Manasi, in the mind. Apartam, without any meaning. Vilasat, appearing. Dvayaya, in whom the dual world. Namaha, obeisances. Jagat, of the cosmic manifestation. Sthana, maintenance. Laya, annihilation. Udayesu, and for creation. Grihita, accepted. Maya, material. Guna, of the modes of nature. Vigrahaya, the forms. Translation. Dear Lord, we beg to offer our obeisances unto you. When the mind is fixed upon you, the world of duality, although a place for material enjoyment, appears meaningless. Your transcendental form is full of transcendental bliss. We therefore offer our respects unto you. Your appearances as Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva are meant for the purpose of creating, maintaining and annihilating this cosmic manifestation. Purport. A pure devotee whose mind is always engaged in the service of the Lord can certainly appreciate the impermanence of this material world. Although such a devotee may be engaged in executing material activities, this stage is called Anashakti. As explained by Srila Rupa Goswami, Anashakta Savisiyanya Taramupajunjataha, a devotee is always unattached to material activities because in the liberated state his mind is always fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. This material world is called Dvaita, the world of duality. A devotee knows very well that everything within this material world is but a manifestation of the Supreme Lord's energy. To maintain the three modes of material nature, the Supreme Lord takes on different forms as Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. Unaffected by the modes of material nature, the Lord takes on different forms to create, maintain, and annihilate the cosmic manifestation. The conclusion is that although the pure devotees appear to engage in transcendental, to engage in material activities in the service of the Lord, he knows very well that material enjoyment for sense gratification has no use whatsoever. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Sakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Si Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sigaro Siyutapada Kamalam Sigurun Vaisnavamscha श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगनरघुनन्दितं तं सजीवं सद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधकृष्णपदं सहगना ललिता शिवशाखं वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणसिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपीककन्त राधकन्त नमोऽस्तु ते तप्त कंचन गौरङ्गे राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी विश्वानुसृतदेवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंशकल्पातरुभ्यश्च सकृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासुदेव गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे The pure devotee is in the material world, but only externally so. His focus is not the material energy. And even upon looking at the material energy, he always sees it in connection with Krishna. And he sees everything simply as an expansion of Krishna. The conditioned soul may look up at the sky, at the luminaries in the sky, and wonder what is out there. He may consider what is out there in the universe. But the pure devotee is not having any such question. He is seeing Krishna, and he's seeing how everything originates in Krishna, everything is simply emanating from Krishna, and he sees everywhere Krishna's energy. And in this way, he is not for a moment bewildered by this material energy in itself. He rather sees Krishna. The material energy may show different features of extraordinary beauty and ghastly features, and whenever a conditioned soul sees a form of beauty, he melts, or she melts, he/she melts immediately, and develops a desire to enjoy this particular object. That is the nature of material contemplation. But such contemplation doesn't arise in the pure devotee. It is not that he is living in a constant battle, seeing the temptation of the all-attractive material energy and saying, "No, I choose for Krishna." That is the position of the sadhaka, who is engaging in the process of pure devotional service, but who within his heart may still be confronted with remnants of material attachment. But one who is truly absorbed in appreciating Krishna, absorbed in appreciating that service to Krishna, is the only activity who is always, from moment to moment, thinking about service to Krishna. Such a devotee has no interest in the material energy. So in our movement, the process begins with the service and not with the absorption. We are not waiting for the absorption to come until finally our whole mind is attracted to Krishna, and then we become really preoccupied in service to Him. Rather the opposite is our process, to simply fill all our time with devotional service. And as we are filling our time with devotional service, the absorption gradually comes. The devotional service itself is so entangling, because after all, we are engaging the material energy in the service of Krishna. And the material energy, by nature, is troublesome. Whenever we work with the material energy, by nature, it has that troublesome feature. Therefore, anything to do in working with the material energy is difficult, sooner or later. Even if for a short while everything goes smooth, you know, it can't last. Something will go wrong, right? And Murphy's Law, whatever can go wrong, will go wrong, is often true. That is dealing with the material energy. Therefore, prakriti stani karsati, the struggle for material existence. It's never comes easy, material life. Then when we take up devotional service, the same struggle continues. Sometimes we join a spiritual movement with the idea, now I will be relieved from all this struggle. But that's not a fact. The struggle continues just as hard. Some people really come with that motive, that it's just too heavy, the struggle for existence, I want relief, let me take shelter in a spiritual movement. But they will be confronted with the hard reality that in devotional service we are also dealing with the material energy. And in fact, sometimes even to a greater extent, because in devotional service we have a principle known as just surrender. I experienced it on several occasions. One year I came to New York. I had just arrived, and Romapat Swami, the GBC, came out of his office and he looks around and says, is there anyone who can drive? Then he saw me. Can you drive? Well, what do you say? Those are the moments where you want to say no, but I said, like, well, yes. Great, great. We've got a driver. They had a driver. And they took me, and there was no such thing as saying, but I hardly slept last night because I've been flying all night. I was the driver. And we were walking, they gave me the key to the car, and we're coming around two blocks, and the car is a big yellow truck with a flat back, and I don't even have a license for that, but everyone was so eager, you're the driver. I just somehow or other became overpowered. And next moment I was driving a big yellow truck with a kirtan party on the back through New York. And my guide was a non-driver. And non-drivers, they tell you, turn right here. Instead of saying, you know, start pulling over towards the right and then we turn right. And so I cut the traffic, and in New York you can get shot for less. So it was intense, and suddenly police cars came from all sides and I saw myself in jail. But they didn't go after me. They went after a shoplifter who they put with their hands against the wall. Seven police cars. The craziest situation. And I thought, if I would have just listened to my father and would have just stayed nicely in a material life, this would have never happened to me. I would have just gotten a job according to my education, and I would have my whole life lived nicely, right, a decent life. Instead, madman that I was, I joined the Hare Krishna movement and see what came of it, you know? See what this was. I went through a moment like this. So it's certainly not the case that in spiritual life, automatically, our life will become easier. No, not at all. I think, but shouldn't we experience some relief from the pangs of material existence? Yes, but this comes exactly by maybe even more difficulties. More difficulties. We're taking on so many difficulties in the service of Krishna, and taking on all these difficulties in the service of Krishna, that is our saving grace. Because that will not leave us, that will create absorption. See, if everything was just only very sweet, then the mind would still think, but maybe You know, the grass is greener on the other side. But when there is overwhelming problem in Krishna consciousness to deal with, that's our saving grace, because it totally absorbs the mind and one can't think of anything else anymore. And then after serving Krishna, after doing that for Krishna, one day we'll find that our material desires are diminished. They have just automatically diminished simply by engaging in this devotional service. And that is how it works. It's not that we have to conquer the senses. How will I conquer the senses? Don't worry, devotional service will conquer the senses for us. Just get busy in devotional service. Do not hesitate. Take responsibility in devotional service. That is the key to purification, and that is the key to rise above the affliction of the material energy, these irresistible desires for sense enjoyment, which seem so important and which are actually so unimportant, and which so quickly will become minimized as we become more and more absorbed in devotional service. But where we hesitate to become absorbed in devotional service, there our spiritual progress will be slowed down. So it is important that we take up some responsibility. In the earlier days of this movement, the movement was very mission-based, and one's level of advancement in Krishna consciousness was being measured to how much one was willing to take responsibility in service in the movement. Later, the focus of our movement shifted somewhere in the mid-80s to a more individual based movement. I sometimes compare it to the Renaissance, because in the Renaissance people came out of the Middle Ages where you were told to think in a certain way, and in the Renaissance people broke out and began to think along individual lines. Well, something like that happened in ISKCON in the mid-80s, and everyone started to think about, well, my spiritual life, and how am I experiencing it, and how am I feeling it, and what is my propensity, and how should I express my bhakti, and things like this became very relevant. And that has kind of survived into the day of today. It is still there. Whereas in an earlier era of ISKCON, the spirit was simply get involved, take up service, and that was a sign of advancement, and anyone who was dragging his feet was in Maya, and he was also told that. So one's Krishna consciousness was directly linked to how much service one was doing. And nowadays, it may not always be seen like that. There was an element of truth in that earlier approach, because that leads to spiritual advancement. It's not automatically that one who takes on a lot of responsibility is spiritually advanced, because some take responsibility, and we found out about that, out of material motives for name, fame, and glory. And ambitious people sometimes can do, people with material ambition can do a lot of service for a while, and then they run out of steam. So it's not necessarily that it is fueled by spiritual advancement, but it is a fact that if one keeps on dedicating himself to devotional service in this movement, one will become spiritually advanced. And I do want to make this point that there is a need for devotees in this day and age to come forward and to just take some service. You may not get the exact dream service. Well, I didn't get that either. I don't know if anybody got that. Some maybe got the dream service. I didn't. Right? I wanted to open up a preaching center, and they said yes, yes, yes. I'd been in India, and my former wife became ill, and we came here to Radhadesh, and we stayed here one winter in Radhadesh, and then Radhadesh said, "Forget it, don't go back to India, stay here, you know. You are from this area of the world, you speak Dutch, you should stay here, you should preach here, don't go back." Whew, they were strong. And then India was calling me back and said, "You can open a preaching center." That sounded really good. So I was getting all geared up, and I reached India, and I had even bought a projector for the preaching center, and I was ready to go. And then I arrived, and then they said, "Well, you know, we thought about it, and we think that we want you to be the guest house manager." And I felt like, ooh, ooh. I came all the way to India, and then they did this number on me, and then it was surrender. I was like, "Argh." Anyway, I sold my projector, and I became the guest house manager. Something I didn't like at all, because I had to deal with a lot of mundane people also, you know, like government officers and things like that, and do PR work, which is not so much my cup of tea, because I'm too Dutch for that, you know, too blunt, you know. I think this sort of, "Oh, how nice," is like difficult for me if I don't mean it, you know what I mean? So I wasn't entirely suited for that service. But through that, I got stuck in 20 years of management, which that little change in my life from, instead of a preaching center, a guest house manager. 20 years down the line, I sort of had a chance to think again, what to do with my life. But I found that although many times during those 20 years, I had my moments that I thought, "Is this what I really want to do? Is this what I'm really meant to be, a manager?" And I'm also a preacher, I thought to myself. I am a preacher, you know, I can do it, you know. And thought maybe that's what I should be. But I had to admit that after 20 years of doing that, that something really changed. And that I became, that the sacrifice in this management took my mind off the senses, so many times, the senses, anyway, no time for the senses, I have to go to a meeting, no time for the senses, so there is a problem, the senses, yes, I know the senses, but got too much service for the senses, right? And that's basically how one becomes purified, and although when one is in the middle of it, one has moments that one thinks like, "This doesn't feel spiritual at all. This feels mundane." Yeah? Yeah, especially, you know, like lots of management, it can sometimes come across as very mundane. But I had to bargain with greedy Muslims. I had to go to hot deserts with ice-cold people who were just very hard-hearted. The temperature of the desert was the hottest day in my life, 59 degrees, dealing with people who were just cold and ruthless and trying to rip us off. It's like, this is hellish, right? The place is called Makrana, and I was thinking, Makrana must be a planet somewhere next to Patala Loka. If you make offenses in the Dham, then they send you to Makrana Loka. And I was getting my purification. It was difficult, hard. I tried to counteract it by eating extra cake, which sort of gives some relief, you know. And I've even seen in GBC meetings, right, how there are cookies, right, on the side, just in case, you know, if it gets too much, you can go out and have a cookie. So it's not always easy. That is my point. But the purification is very powerful. It's very powerful. And that is important. Therefore, we should not just look for a comfortable spiritual life and look where is the nectar and where is, and just sort of, as they say, follow the music, you know, just always be there in every party and think and be there at the feet of every Swami and catch every little bit of nectar and every little bit of juice, and in this way I'm really going to make it. One devotee said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I always want to stay at your feet." And Prabhupada said, "That's going to be very difficult because my feet are always moving." How can you always sit at Prabhupada's feet? He's going here and there and everywhere. So Prabhupada certainly wanted his disciples to not just sit at his feet. That was obviously what he meant. He wanted them to be mature and to take responsibility to understand what we're really doing here. That we are transforming the entire world. That our business is to really penetrate with Krishna consciousness on all levels of society, transform society, and make Krishna consciousness more and more prominent until it floods the entire world. And Prabhupada wanted his men and women to be concerned about that. When some lady came and showed Prabhupada her newborn baby, Prabhupada said, "Yes, who is more important, Krishna or the baby?" So he had to swallow and say, "Krishna." It is so. Prabhupada was in that respect. He was very human. He was sensitive. He was not cold and hard-hearted, but he certainly was pushing people to the higher transcendental ideal and was into asking for sacrifice. And this spirit is something that went down in the middle of the 80s due to some of the leaders who were not completely driven by pure devotion, but their devotion was mixed with ambition and they ran out of steam. And then the followers started looking, and we're also getting tired, and are we the next one to go over the edge? And everyone held back and suddenly said, "Well, wait a minute, careful, careful now, not too much sacrifice all at once." And we went into a phase of our movement of hesitance, and where I did once a seminar in 1999, and it was called From 66 to 99, right? The letter 6 are like this. In 66, we're all going back to the spiritual world. You look at the Back to Godhead magazine, and it's just one success after another. And here's our new temple in this country, that country, the new project, the preaching there, the preaching here. It's growing and growing, and it's all blissful. And Prabhupada at the center of it all. And then 99. In 66, we're all going back to God. In 99, if your guru is a Parama Presta Priya Sakhi, then theoretically it is possible that you could go back to God in this lifetime, although it never really happens. And therefore prepare yourself that it's going to take many, many births. And you know, you may as well, therefore, be honest, Prabhu. Kind of 99. Well, since 99, quite some years have passed. It is 2011. We have seen that when we pursue too much, when we get too psychological, when we get too much concerned with my nature, my needs, my, oh me, oh my, then at the end of the day, what will still be done for Krishna? And then you get temples where there are more deities than devotees. And then you're just wondering, like, well, is this really how it was meant to be? So, therefore, the good old spirit of sacrifice is, it's old-fashioned, I know. Some might say old-fashioned, old fascist. Whatever it is, it works. It works. It does work. I think that we can't make it any softer than it is. Without sacrifice, it will not really be possible to break through to the more advanced stages of devotional service. Not that that has to be done with harshness in the past. Leaders were calling for sacrifice in the mode of passion. They were in the mode of passion, and they were pushing and sometimes inconsiderate. And they're driving people into sacrifices without considering that there were also personal needs. That's not good. A balance is required. But if our meditation is not sacrifice, then it will be hard to rise above these strong material desires. And then the question is, and how do you conquer sex desire? Again and again the question comes up, what about sex desire? What about it? And the answer is, the only answer is, get really absorbed in devotional service. That is the only answer. There is no other answer. With that, I'll close the discussion and leave it with you as something to think about. It's not fanaticism. I mean, don't take this as he's trying to ram something down our throat. No, it's more from... Yeah, realizing that it's not so easy to rise above sense gratification. Mm-hmm. Any questions, any comments? Yeah, there's nectar. Joy, huh? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That element is very true. Yes. But it's not so simple. It's not so simple. It's more complex. That there are different elements. For the pure devotee, every step is joyful. Even if he or she has to be in the heaviest material circumstances, it's still joyful for the pure devotee. But for the conditioned devotee, a conditioned devotee comes with all sincerity and feels great joy to be in the temple. But then, in dealing with the material energy, there come moments that one is confronted with something very extremely difficult and something one particularly finds very difficult. Then one cannot just, because one's not so advanced yet, then one sometimes loses that feeling of joyfulness. And that is the stage of struggle in spiritual life. And So then there comes the element of sacrifice. And then when one makes such a sacrifice over a prolonged period of time, and there is within the sacrifice a deeper joy, satisfaction, and then there are moments of struggle. But if one struggles like that, then one will emerge fully joyful. Then one will emerge really joyful. Kamsa. But good point. Yeah, thank you also. So, yeah. Cults. Yeah. Yeah, these cults are very dangerous.
On one hand, I feel like I want to make a full sacrifice, I think. But then maybe there's also some reserve feeling that I've seen in the past few things where people have been exploited or elements have been taken advantage of.
My first question is, do you think ISKCON is a cult?
A culture.
Now the word cult means that in the context of the cult that is exploiting, then we're speaking about an artificial process where people are not following a correct spiritual understanding and a movement that then has leaders who are enjoying the fruits of the other cult members who are being exploited. That kind of a model is being painted there. So that has nothing to do with ISKCON. ISKCON's not a cult, right, in that sense, or not a sect. Yeah. But one of our congregational members in Amsterdam once told me a nice thing and said, ISKCON is definitely not a cult. There's no doubt about it. ISKCON is not a cult, but it surely behaves like one. And I said, well, yeah, but that there's an element of truth in that, you know. He had been around for a long time. So sometimes we've had elements of people who were pushing people into sacrifice without taking proper care of their personal needs and so on. Therefore, one must be careful to take shelter of a proper spiritual leader. And if one accepts a spiritual master, one must really have that faith that here's a person who's not going to exploit me, here's a person who's going to push me into some sacrifice that I may expect, but at the same time, he will also protect my personal interests. That faith you have to have. Otherwise, don't take shelter of a spiritual master if you don't have that faith. Then withdraw. Even if you had taken externally shelter, if you don't have that faith, then better go home. Because that faith you have to have, otherwise it will be difficult. Yeah, you can do that also, but then you have to relax in a way connected to Krishna. And so you can relax physically, yeah. You don't have to do anything. You can, but then you have to enter into samadhi. Yeah? You have to then mentally completely absorb in Krishna. Then you don't have to do any work, but the consciousness has to be fixed on Krishna. And that doesn't come without any work. That takes surrender. That's the endeavor. So that last little bit of work has to be done. One can avoid all types of work, but one has to then fully absorb the consciousness in remembering Krishna. That's still work. And that work is so difficult that most of us can't do it, because the mind is very turbulent and doesn't let itself be fixed. And therefore, Bhogaiswarya Prasaktanam, Taya Paritasitanam, Vyavasyatmika Buddhi, Samaduna Vidyate. If one is too attached to sense gratification, one cannot fix the mind. Therefore, it's recommended that before we relax, that we first engage the senses. Therefore, Prabhupada says, work now and samadhi later. So, first engage the senses in the service of Krishna and make a sacrifice to the senses. And then samadhi will follow. Then you can relax. If you still want to. Yeah. No, no. I think then you are, it is a sort of surrender, but it's not surrender to Krishna. But surrendering to Krishna means that Krishna has given many directions. Surrender to Krishna doesn't just mean thinking of Krishna, remembering Krishna, 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 seeing someone with a flute and a peacock feather and Krishna, Krishna. No, it means Krishna in total. Krishna with the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah? Krishna with his instructions. Krishna who tells you what to do and what not to do. That's the problem with Krishna. He's not only sweet and playing a flute, but he tells you what to do and what not to do. Yeah? And that's why people rather have an impersonal God. That would be much easier because he doesn't give any instructions. But Krishna, he tells you, do this, don't do that. You can offer this to me, cannot offer that to me. For example, it's winter now, isn't it? It's cold. And you imagine it's early in the morning. This weather makes hungry. You know, you're walking in the street and you come past the baker and you smell the smell of fresh baked bread. Not the baker here, but the baker somewhere else in town. Fresh baked bread. Your mouth starts watering, and, you know, what about that? Forget it, you know. That bread is not vegetarian. But the mouth waters. The nose is vibrating. The stomach is telling, yes, yes, yes. That is the difficulty. So if we go with the flow, the senses get agitated by the external energy and they take us in directions which go against the desire of Krishna. Therefore, one must say no on many occasions. No to the bread, and no to so many other things. So, no, one cannot just go with the flow. If one goes with the flow, then one becomes entangled in the senses. The senses will drive us then, and they will drive us away from Krishna. Because the senses will, when we give in to the senses, with what they get, they will still not be satisfied, and then they want stronger and stronger things, and then we'll go down deeper and deeper and deeper into the material energy, and eventually we get sinful. We get more and more sinful, you see. So if you follow the senses, just let go, you become sinful. And that is diametrically opposed to Krishna. So we cannot just let go. Only when we are purified, when we are purified, then we can become completely natural and just follow the flow, because the flow will always take us towards Krishna, like that. That's how it works. All right, we are finished. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.